This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I work with entrepreneurs and go-getters to optimize the health and performance of these world-changing innovators. You know, people kind of like you. Before we jump into today's podcast, I want to thank our sponsor, Legacy. Legacy is an online membership community that provides monthly accountability coaching with a personal health coach and access to lifestyle products at discounts not available to the general public. The neuroscience that connects the benefits of being accountable to another human being and our capacity to stick to goals and commitments is profound. We are sculpted by our commitment and discipline to our daily decisions. Legacy helps that happen. Legacy memberships start at just $22 per month. To learn more, visit legacymemberships.com. Today, I sat down with Dr. Rhea Mehta. Rhea has a PhD in molecular toxicology and nutritional biochemistry. She is the founder of Living Rhea. She's a contributor to the Huffington Post, Mind Body Green. She speaks on optimal life design and nutrition. She sees private clients. And most recently, she is the CEO of Bowhead Health, a personalized healthcare technology startup. She is the founder of Global Smoothie Day and one of the co-founders of Camp Reset, which we get into in the podcast. One might wonder whether perhaps she has more hours in her day than any of us. Rhea, as you are about to find out, is a little powerhouse of energy. She describes herself as a smoothie operator, and this might actually be the secret to her success. We had a great conversation and we got into, naturally, the nitty-gritty of how to make a great smoothie, the most important element of leadership, and how to fundamentally let go and transform your life through fun and escape. This episode is a gem. You won't want to miss it. Rhea, it is such a pleasure to have you on the Entrepology Podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
I want to just jump right into it, but let's just call something out right from the beginning. You are this beautiful integration of art and science. How did you get to where you are right now?
Well, thank you for that observation. I don't think I've ever heard that before. And so it makes me feel really good to be labeled as, a beautiful integration of art and science. So I would say, honestly, I grew up with art being a very powerful influence in my life. And it was more of an extracurricular activity at home during, cultural events. And so, like any other first-generation Canadian, I was definitely pushed to pursue the sciences and to really pursue math, science, that kind of thing in terms of my academic pursuits. But singing was, and fashion and color and expression was always sort of part of my childhood. I never really clued in until I would say a number of years ago. I would say in 2013, I just went on this self-discovery journey, and that was triggered by a number of life events. My father passed away. I finished my PhD. A number of things. I started meditating, but I started to find my voice. And one thing I would say is, as I started to find my voice and start to express myself, I started to just care less what people thought of me. And as that sort of started to happen, I just started to connect with this new side of me. And that was someone who wore really bright colors and massive earrings. And, I cut my hair and did like a sort of an asymmetrical bob. And people were just kind of like, whoa, where did she come from? And where did Rhea come from? And I think it's just a part of me. And I started to honor my truth and really just care less about judgment from others.
Was there something that just shifted in you that enabled you to do that? Was there an event where your confidence, you're just like, I'm just flipping it on. I've got nothing to lose. Because I think a lot of people are striving for that. They want that. And then it's elusive to them.
Yeah. So 2013 was sort of this, really big year for me. And, for a lot of people, it's usually triggered by some kind of massive life event. And for me, besides having my own sort of health issue that, kind of changed direction in my life, I would say my father's passing really just sort of broke me. And, you know, in that moment, I was just so vulnerable and raw, and I had to sort of, you know, pick up my life and pick up the pieces. And so I would say, like, it was that vulnerability. And I think a lot of people can get there in different ways. I got there through my dealing with my father's death, and also a really serious breakup with a long-term partner who I was engaged to. So I would say, like, that vulnerable state allowed me to just sort of, you know, adopt different practices and ways of being. And I would say, like, one of the biggest supporters in my life to sort of help me stay in this raw state and you know, not go back to just sort of like suppressing all these different sides of me that I had really suppressed, especially, which, you know, the world of academia and science and really does kind of push you into this, you know, this world of just being very rational minded and focused. And so I would say is community. I managed to find a massive community, global community of people who were also weird and loud and expressive. And they gave me permission to be myself.
Well, it's so nice, right, when you have a group of people that you can fall back onto and exactly that, right? Give you permission to be who you are. Yeah. And the nugget there in terms of wisdom is this concept of vulnerability, because I find this even in science, everyone is so reluctant to look vulnerable. Everyone needs to look right. And the two are often so incongruent with finding that sense of self and that true self.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
When people ask you what you do, what do you say?
So usually I kind of giggle like that. And sometimes, I mean, honestly, it's very dependent on who I'm speaking to. Sometimes I'll ask them to, you know, ask me another question, especially if it's meeting for the first time and if it's, you know, sort of a more casual setting. But today I actually, if someone was to ask me what I'm doing, because I am in this new role, I would say that I am the CEO of a health technology startup. And that's generally how I am introducing myself in the last month.
Yeah, and that's a mouthful. And listen, I understand that, because I had that answer for a period of time too. And just before we got onto this call, we had a brief discussion around that. And I want to segue to that really quickly, because it's a big deal to be involved in a startup, as most of our listeners know. And it's extremely demanding, and there's a lot of stress and a lot of pressures from a variety of angles, personal and otherwise. How do you keep it all together? How do you keep focused and grounded in who you are and your values with respect to health?
Well, obviously I'm still learning, and I'm still quite fresh in the CEO role, but things are quite intense already. And I would say what's really keeping me rooted, and, you know, that word grounding or rooting, that's sort of like my daily mantra. So I do what I can every morning to find my grounding, to, you know, reconnect to earth, because it's so easy to just like live in the clouds when, you know, you're doing like a million different things. And also there's so many pressures around fundraising and business development. So I would say my meditation practice I'm working on a different kind of meditation practice right now. I'm doing an awareness meditation. So it really helps me sort of move behind my thoughts. And that is something that, you know, is sort of my saving grace right now. And, you know, beyond my meditation practice, I'm just making time in my calendar. I have dedicated self-care time in my calendar. And, you know, and if I really have to compromise and cut some of it, I will, but I'll have to go through that conversation with myself and, you know, and then find another place to put it in there. And that might mean having to cut, you know, perhaps like a social event with a friend, or, you know, with another networking event. But it's really crucial to have that self-care built into my schedule. And, you know, my daily smoothie is I've developed a ritual around my green smoothie, you know, when I drink it, I don't do anything else. I just, you know, so it's a meditative experience. It's a gratitude practice. It's really become this, like, this powerful force in my life that, it just helps me remember, why I'm here and, you know, and just to be grateful every day.
Yeah. Okay. And I saw you make that segue there and pull out the smoothie. It's almost like this is like a life passion of yours. You know, you are a molecular toxicologist and a nutritional biochemist. And at the end of the day, I feel like you are also a smoothie scientist. What makes the perfect smoothie, scientifically speaking?
So yes, I like to call myself a smoothie operator. And I would say, honestly, you know, unfortunately, there isn't, you know, a lot of science in terms of, you know, like if you looked on PubMed, you wouldn't find like clinical trials on smoothie consumption. And, you know, I've really scanned the internet and, you know, talked to a number of nutritional scientists about this. But I would say, in terms of the key components of a smoothie, because, you know, you could go to McDonald's and get a smoothie or Wendy's, and it's really important to you know, to think about what's the makeup of the smoothie. So in terms of the makeup or the formula, I would say 60% of that smoothie should contain greens, dark leafy greens, you know, your kales, your spinach, your bok choy, fennel, Brussels sprouts, any green that you can really think of, should, you know, encompass that 60%. And that, you know, and greens not only contain, micronutrients, minerals, and vitamins, but they also contain fiber. And that's, you know, that's a crucial, ingredient to, you know, smoothies to support gut health. And I would say the other 20% should include healthy fats, so things like avocado, coconut, you know, flax, chia, hemp, and the other component is protein. So I like to use fermented vegan protein just because it's, you know, it's accessible to everyone. It's most often digestible by most people as well. And then the other 20% fruit. So I like to use antioxidant rich fruit and also fruit with a low glycemic load or index. So things like blueberries or green apples. But, you know, I would say because there are no sort of, you know, clinical trials behind a smoothie, I would say just make sure that it's super high in nutrition in, you know, in terms of your macronutrients, your fats, your proteins, your fiber, and then also your looking at the micronutrients, your vitamins, your minerals, your antioxidants, your polyphenols, and also just making sure that it's not causing a spike in blood sugar. So if you drink a smoothie and you feel low energy after, well, you've probably added too much fruit. So, you know, your smoothie should really be the, you know, your energetic boost of the day.
Yeah. And I hear people say this in my practice all the time, right? They're like, oh, I'm having a smoothie. It's got bananas and strawberries and honey and sweetened almond milk. And it's sugar. It's sugar. Like there's right and wrong ways to do a smoothie. Do you have 5 specific secret smoothie ingredients that you have in your cupboard and that insiders might also want to have in their cupboard?
Ooh, well, okay, so I would say, and I, you know, I kind of shared like the breakdown of a smoothie in terms of the key sort of components. So, you know, to fall into those categories, I would say in the micronutrient sort of mineral vitamin category, I would say one of the powerhouses is, and you're obviously, I'm sure you're familiar with this, is spirulina or chlorella. So, you know, single or blue-green algae. And, you know, it's just a powerhouse in terms of the number of minerals. And we don't get enough greens in our day. So it's just a powerful way to, you know, to take in those nutrients. So I would say spirulina or chlorella. And I would also add an antioxidant. And so one of my favorite antioxidants is camu camu. It's a Peruvian fruit, and it's a dried powder that you can keep in your cupboard. And it's very high in vitamin C. So I would say camu camu, spirulina, and I would also include a stress balancer, a reducer. And the one that has the most scientific evidence is rhodiola. So there's a lot of other ones that sort of fit in this sort of adaptogenic stress-reducing category, but rhodiola, you could buy it as a powder. So all of these 3 you can buy as powders. You can store in your cupboard, no problem. And then I would throw in, I mentioned protein and healthy fat, because a lot of people make a smoothie, but they forget about those key components that will give you that, you know, sustained energy. So I would say a protein, I mentioned a fermented vegan protein. So, you know, something that has maybe like some pea protein or other, you know, hemp. Hemp is another really great protein, brown rice sprouted protein. So that all kind of fits in the protein category. And you can easily keep that in your cupboard as well. And then in terms of fat, I would say, I mean, my favorite fat, which I wouldn't keep in my cupboard, I would probably keep in my fridge or counter, is avocado. So I always, you know, would include a healthy fat like avocado, but otherwise coconut, coconut flakes, coconut butter, or avocado oil or flax oil. I would say those are, you know, those are sort of, those are my five super, superpower ingredients in the smoothie.
I love those. And I noticed at the grocery store even the other day that you can now get frozen coconut to add to smoothies, and, you know, packaged organic kale. And like, it's easier to build these really incredible starts to the day. Do you drink one every day?
I do. I drink one every single day when I'm traveling. I bring a blender with me, or I'll contact, you know, the Airbnb host and request a blender.
I love it. But yeah, you're staying true to this discipline, right? That you know is nourishing your body. What about those people who are like, I've had enough of the smoothie. Like, I need a smoothie sabbatical, or it's the middle of a cold winter. We're in Canada right now, and today's a cold day. Yesterday was a hot day. You know, a lot of times when it's cooler, people don't want to eat cooler foods. Do you have an alternative, or do you have a warm smoothie?
Yeah, so I would say, so yes, I have a warm smoothie. I mean, I think that, you know, a smoothie is really just a number of blended, nutrient-dense foods. So you could easily steam vegetables and make a soup. But the, you know, the idea is like, if you want to take a break from a smoothie, then just try and be intentional about consuming that, you know, that volume of nutrition that has that sort of makeup, like that formula I mentioned, and just chew it really well. Cause most of us aren't chewing our food. So I'd say, like, you know, have a giant salad and make sure that you're including the healthy fats and the protein into that salad. And you're having, you know, a small amount of fruit, or, you know, some antioxidants elsewhere in your diet. So it's definitely possible to take, you know, a smoothie sabbatical and still get that volume of nutrition and fiber and macronutrient support. But it's hard, because we will often make that commitment, but then, you know, life will get in the way, and we won't consume that volume of especially greens. And so I would say there's also, we talked about what superfoods you can keep in your cupboard. So I have some friends who, they don't have time to go grocery shopping, so they just buy a bunch of these powdered superfoods that contain these, you know, multivitamins and minerals, and they just make a shake with the protein, with the healthy fats, and they just they add a bit of coconut oil, they throw in some protein powder, and they just add a bunch of powders. So you can still kind of play around with it. That would be more room temperature. You can also take your smoothie out of the fridge and let it sit for about, you know, 45 minutes and let it just get down to room temperature. So there's lots of ways around it, for sure.
Right. And one thing that I do with smoothies, because our house is relatively small, and I've got three young kids. So if I throw my blender on first thing in the morning while they're still sleeping, everyone's up. And so one of the things I would do, I would leave the protein out, but I'd often make a smoothie the night before, stick it in the fridge, and then in the morning I'd pour it out and I would just sort of whisk some protein in. And anytime I've mentioned this online, I get this horde of people who are like, you're destroying all the nutrients and this is like smoothie sacrilege. I'm going to trust your opinion on this as like a PhD in nutritional science and the founder of World Smoothie Day. Am I totally destroying my smoothie?
we hear a lot of things around that, right? Like people, you know, shaming people for, you know, cooking tomatoes because you're destroying the vitamin C and all these things. I would just say, like, if you're going as far as making a smoothie, whether it's the night before and, you know, building some of the ingredients into the blender or the, you know, your mason jar the night before, I mean, you're like, that's good enough. And if you happen to, you know, destroy even like 10 to 20% of the nutrition, you're still probably getting more nutrition in your day than the average person. So, you know, there's, if we were to go into a lab and to assess, you know, 5 different ways of making a smoothie, we'd probably get a lot of data. And, you know, and I wish that that study existed, and maybe I will, you know, conduct that study one day. But I would just say, like, let's just get this amount of nutrition. And if you really do feel high energy and, you know, and great in your body and grounded, then you probably won't even think about those other, you know, those other sort of nice to haves. They're just a waste of time to think about.
Yeah. And you just reach a point where you can't live in a bubble, right? And you have to do the best you can with the environment and circumstances that you are working with. So thank you for that. I'm just going to take this episode and I'm just going to paste it every time someone in a forum has something to say about my smoothie routine. So I don't want to spend the whole time talking about smoothies, although I feel like we could, because you are so much more than that. And from my perspective, they are really just a tactic for a much larger strategy, which is really a health and wellness movement. What is your big why? What drives you?
What drives me? I would say, you know, my big why in life is really just to make, you know, healthy living more accessible. You know, it's something that, you know, in terms of like the health world and the people I know in the health world and a lot of the influencers I know, you know, a lot of us got to this world because of some, you know, serious life event, either, you know, losing a parent or getting sick, or like it's always some kind of, there's always some really strong trigger that moves us into this world. And it's unfortunate because, you know, it's such a powerful place to be healthy and to, you know, and to take care of yourself in this way and to love yourself. And so I would say, I want to help people, you know, form this level of commitment and just make, you know, make healthy living more enticing and inviting and accessible and inclusive, so that they can, you know, they too can experience this world without having to wait until, you know, it's too late, or wait until they get sick and are forced into this world.
Yeah. And can you talk about this, about like this concept of self-love? You said something before we even started this conversation, and where you're like, self-care is a leadership issue. And I know for a lot of people, we have this discussion around self-love, and where a lot of people's paradigm stops for them is that self-love is a selfie. Self-love is, oh, you know, I've been working so hard, I bought myself a new Prada bag. What, like, where do you go with these people? Because I feel like they're stuck and there's so much more potential for them in terms of understanding self-love. What's your perspective on self-love?
You know, I would say that, you know, how the word is self-love, and I think it's really about understanding self, because we a lot of us have an idea of what love is and hopefully feel it every day. But I think this concept of self is a little bit confusing to a lot of people. So the way I look at it is, like, if you were to strip yourself from, you know, possessions, materials, beliefs, just sort of, you know, get naked really, and picture yourself as this like little baby, you know, could you love that person? Could you connect to that person? Would you have that person's back? You know, would you feel secure, just with, you know, with that connection to that raw, real, vulnerable baby, you know, child self of yours? And so I would say that's really self-love. It's just, you know, it's connecting to yourself, trusting yourself, respecting yourself outside of, you know, the belief systems, outside of the materials. And those are all great as well. You know, it's nice to go to the spa sometime and to give yourself that sort of, you know, material boost. But it's more than that. It's connecting with who you are at your core. And the way that, you know, I mentioned, like, connecting to your sort of inner child, that's what helps me visualize it. You know, it's like stripping yourself down fully naked and, you know, could you just love and honor that person as, you know, as your deity, as your, you know, god or goddess.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think it was Daniel Laporte who talks about cheap, easy versus quality easy and rewarding yourself. And she's like, cheap easy is like you go and you buy yourself the chocolate bar or the bag of chips or the bowl of ice cream because you've had a rotten day. And the quality easy, and by easy, she's talking about access to emotions, is like you go home and you like stop at the gym on the way and like you genuinely get back to yourself because you feel like you're in a place of deficit. And I feel like that's exactly what you're talking about. And when you were talking about rewinding and connecting, it reminded me of another initiative that you are involved in, which is Camp Reset. And I want to talk about this for two reasons. One, I love this idea of bringing people back to a place of childhood that was sort of, you know, there was reckless abandon, there was new experiences, there was no technology, and this concept of connectivity, which I feel like is sort of a pervasive theme throughout your life and your initiatives and the things that you're involved in. What is Camp Reset and why do I want to go to it?
Well, Camp Reset is a, so it's an initiative that I co-founded with seven other Toronto community builders. And it's, you know, it's essentially a 4-day retreat that, that sort of takes you on this journey of, like you said, reconnecting with, you know, with your childlike self before you, you know, before you, you know, became sort of a victim to a lot of the pressures of teenagehood and adulthood. And so it's, are the principles of Camp Reset are, you know, play, connection, transformation. Or, you know, that's sort of our mantra. And, when you go to Camp Reset, you know, we take away your technology on the first day. We actually have a ceremony, so it's no tech. We request for everyone to come up with their own name, separate from their real name, so no real names, and no work talk, and you know, and I would say like the and so Camp Reset attracts people from, you know, all walks of life, all demographics, a lot of artists, entrepreneurs, change makers, parents, and the main sort of like ingredient of Camp Reset is to challenge you to do things that are outside of your comfort zone. So it's, you know, for everyone, it's like a choose your own adventure. Everyone will sort of, you know, find that in their own way, but it pushes you to, you know, to think in a different way or to, you know, move in a different way or to, you know, play in a different way. And, you know, and when you take away this like work talk, talking about, you know, what you do, this adult talk, you get to explore other sides of you that have been suppressed. So when you asked me earlier about, you know, my, you know, integration of art and science, a lot of, you know, the artist side of me, the creative side of me has actually, you know, even as a co-founder, but as a participant as well, has come out through the Camp Reset community, because we really, you know, challenge people to just to do things like they did when they were a kid. So, you know, if you were like, imagine your 8-year-old self, what did you do? You probably colored, and you probably, you know, moved and danced freely, and also expressed your frustrations and cried and screamed. So we create like this beautiful experience. You know, we like to call ourselves experience designers because we put a lot of thought into the experience arc of Camp Reset so that you can go through all the sort of stages of emotion and feeling as if you were, you know, as if you were a child.
Yeah, I love that. And I think we're just so disassociated from that as adults. And we identify with what our job title is, not who we are as people. And it's actually so rare that we get the opportunity to engage on that level. For those who can't make it to camp, what are the essential ingredients for an intentional reset? So say, for example, you know, someone was taking a long weekend to just reconnect, or you had, you know, a couple going away and they're like, okay, let's just make this about resetting. What do they need to keep in mind to really make that effective?
Well, I think you touched on it by saying going away. So I think, you know, leaving the comfort of your own home, going into nature, you know, Camp Reset takes place in the Toronto area, but outside in nature, in this beautiful, you know, bed of Mother Earth. So I would say, like, get out, go into nature, turn off your phone, all your technology, or leave it at home. And then just sort of like think about all of your passions and interests that, you know, that you have, or even just picture yourself as the younger you, and, you know, and bring some of that with you on your trip. So whether it's like a coloring book, or, you know, or like even stuffed animals, or, you know, just, or music, or, you know, any sort of project that brings out sort of more of your creative side, or challenge yourself. So if it's, you know, going on a crazy long hike, or, you know, a bike ride, or something that's really pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. And, you know, it could be like building your own fire. It could be, you know, just sort of like, even reading, but reading and talking about, you know, some really interesting subjects, and not, you know, again, not talking about work. And I would say, going with people. So, you know, you could go on a solo journey, and that's beautiful. But part of Camp Reset, I mentioned, is, you know, our mantra, our objectives are play, connection, and transformation. So, you know, while everyone sort of has their own transformative journey, and you know, that speaks to them, and it sticks to different people in different ways, but I would say connection is really important. So you can have your own solo self-love sort of connection journey, but it's also important to connect with other people and have them, you know, be mirrors for you.
Right, which is really what community does, right? Is having access to that, and where it's all founded in integrity, you get all of this incredible feedback and opportunity to learn about yourself.
Absolutely.
Have you always wanted to be an entrepreneur?
No. I would say what really enticed me about entrepreneurship and just sort of doing your own thing is really the freedom. You know, I developed a set of values, and I became very much committed to expressing those values in everything I did in life, from, you know, professional and personal pursuits. And so I at the time that I decided in adulthood to go and sort of pursue entrepreneurship after my PhD, after a couple of jobs, I didn't feel like what I was doing was aligned with these new values that I felt so strongly about. So I would say I'm in the place in my life where entrepreneurship just makes the most sense, because I feel like I have the capacity now to, you know, to create, to like actually create a project and build a team and empower that team to, you know, to move forward and to scale. But I would say, like, if I, you know, if maybe down the road, I might meet a team that's already in existence that has an incredible set of values that I feel aligned with. And, you know, and if I feel strongly about, you know, going back into the workforce because I believe in that team's mission, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I'd be very open to it.
I like that. Your values are your compass.
Mm-hmm.
How would you define health?
You know, it's really funny because we don't really have this like health index or score. So it's, you know, it's, I like to think about the word well-being as opposed to health, because I think well-being, you know, most of us are more aligned with. And taking that even one step further, energy levels and happiness. So I would say, you know, I would define health as looking at, you know, how energetic do I feel today? How happy do I feel? And, you know, and personally, I would say, when I think about health, there's only one sort of way that I think about health, and that's, you know, being optimally healthy. So that's like, you know, turning the dial up in all the systems in my body, in my life, you know, and making sure that I'm functioning optimally in every single thing that I do. And I know that that's, you know, that's obviously very subjective and that's my own experience, but that's how I look at health. So if I, you know, if I'm thinking about health, I'm thinking, well, is that, I always put the word optimal in front of it. And I think for a lot of people, you know, I use the word energy levels and happiness, because I think those are words that we can easily, you know, relate to. And so, that's really how I define health.
You know, and I'm sitting here smiling because I had a patient in the other day, and she said, well, how do you define health? And I said, well, health is really ultimately, and I always talk about optimization just by nature of what I do, but, I was like, health happens when you're happy. And she looked at me and she's like, do people really feel that way? And I was sad for her, but at the same time, I was like, okay, we have such good work to do together, because at the end of the day, it's a metric related to quality of life. And throwing happiness into the mix with respect to health is a whole new standard with respect to how we look at health. We are always told, you know, a clean bill of health means you're told you are fine. And I think for people like you and I, fine is sort of the antithesis of how we want to live our lives. So I fully appreciate your perspective there, and I love it because it's so important and so insightful and so beyond where people have been trained to think about their health.
Thank you for sharing. And it's something that I also, you know, throw into my practice. We do lots of self-discovery work and we do lots of mindset training because, as you said, you know, happiness is completely tied to our state of health. And, you know, I think that science is you know, showing us that mindset is also a key component to, you know, to health and well-being. And so I'm excited to see, you know, what the different advancements in this area in the years to come.
What's the process that you take people through when they're working with you as clients?
I have sort of a 4-step process. The first step is self-discovery. So it's really just, you know, painting a picture of your sacred self. You know, so many of us have idols and gurus and teachers. And my intention is to really help my clients paint a picture where they are their own, you know, guru, teacher, deity. And so that's really step one. It's like discover who you are from, you know, your best version. And that's really important because everything else we do in the program, you know, sort of comes back to that picture that you painted about yourself. And that's, you know, really identifying your goals and your intentions and just understanding, you know, where you want to be 1 month from now, 3 months, 5 years, 10 years down the road, and also understanding what your big why is, because it's very aligned with your health. Step two is ritual and routine. So we start to build our strategy towards, you know, towards healthy living, because like there's only so much information that we can take before we sort of just, you know, don't do anything. And so we start to build a strategy in place, you know, in our calendar. We like really carve out the time in our day. I like to, you know, call it ceremonies. We have our sun ceremony and our moon ceremony and all the other sort of in between spaces in our day. And we start to fill the calendar and figure out how we're going to, you know, place these practices, these rituals into our routine. And I have a journal that I get all my clients to use. It's a self-care tracker and it tracks, you know, all your physical stuff, your mental stuff, your emotional stuff. So everything is organized into this journal, and my clients who use it, you know, generally accelerate much faster on their journey because they're tracking and they're looking at, you know, looking at patterns, and I'm looking at it as well. So it's much easier for us to investigate together. And then step three is detoxification. So it's really just looking at, you know, all the inflammatory triggers in your life, not just in your diet, but in your relationships and, you know, with work, in your home. So it's just taking an inventory of, you know, all the inflammatory triggers and then doing what you can to remove them, whatever it is, one by one, or, you know, in maybe five at a time and committing to it. So actually, you know, committing to maybe it's a detox of sorts, but some form of a commitment towards starting to remove those triggers, or at least acknowledge them and state your intention to, you know, release them at some point. Because a lot of them are out of our control, but there's so many of these triggers that are actually within our control to remove. And then the last portion, it's funny because, you know, I am an integrative nutrition coach, and the last portion of my program is actually nutrition. It's because it's once we get to that point, people are listening. They're engaged, they're in it, they're committed, they're excited, and now they're ready to you know, to learn about nutrients, you know, macronutrients, micronutrients, all the different hacks, nutrition hacks that will boost our energy and our performance and our productivity. So that's the last component. Obviously, it's the meatiest, but it's really important to kind of go through those three initial steps to get to that place of, you know, to really understanding how to eat in a way that's, you know, that's supporting you, not, you know, that's supporting a million other people that's supporting you, your personalized protocol. And by then you'll have learned so much about yourself that now we can go and design your personalized protocol around nutrition.
I love that. And there's just all these parameters in there that move this towards a place of sustainability versus just sort of a passing trend or interest that people would have. It's so brilliantly constructed. I love it.
Thank you so much.
Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. This month, we are talking about stress and adrenal fatigue. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. Rhea, I want to transition the conversation, and you've had all these buckets of awesomeness that you have you've thrown into our conversation today. I want to move to what I call KPIs or key performance indicators. And as a CEO, you're probably really used to being asked to present KPIs with respect to your business. But I also like to talk about them with respect to health. So these are not things that you have seen in terms of questions before. But I just want you to answer with whatever comes to mind most easily for you. So the first question I have is, do you have a consistent morning routine? And I feel like I know the answer to that. And if so, can you share it?
Yes.
Bingo.
Yes, definitely. It's part of my, you know, my sun ceremony. I would say, it's always kind of changing, but I like to burn sage every morning and then sit in meditation and then go and make some lemon water. And I usually throw in a little bit of chlorophyll into that lemon water. And so that's sort of, those are like the standards. They're always there. That sage burning is really just what helps me to connect and ground. And so while I'm burning it, I'm sort of going through this thought process of, you know, why I'm grateful. I usually express my gratitude to myself first, and then I express gratitude towards my husband, and then I express gratitude to any other person or thing or feeling that I have. And so it's always sort of those three, and I state my intentions for the day. And then if there's anything else that's coming up, if there's something like an emotional splinter or, you know, forgiveness or something that I feel is really present in the moment, I'll give myself, you know, the time. And usually it's 1 or 2 minutes to just feel into that. So to feel that emotion. So that's sort of, you know, so that sage practice for me is like this beautiful emotional healing practice that I do. And those are non-negotiables.
I love that. It's beautiful. Fiction or nonfiction?
If you asked me 6 months ago, I would say nonfiction, but in recent days, I would say fiction.
And what are you reading right now?
I just finished reading this book called All the Light We Cannot See. Not sure if you've heard about it, but it takes place during World War II, and it's just like a really beautiful story about two different sides of experiencing what was happening in Germany and also what was happening in France during World War II. So it's a story, but it really allowed you to go back into that time. And it was a really important time for us to remember and feel into.
Yeah, it's on my bedside table right now, but I haven't started it. So this is going to be a good call to action.
Yeah.
Hot beverage of choice, and how do you prepare it?
Turmeric latte.
Ooh.
The way I prepare it, I add I would say about a tablespoon and a half of, so I do this all in my blender. While I'm boiling water to my blender, I add about a tablespoon and a half of turmeric powder. And then I add a bunch of black pepper because that supports the absorption of turmeric. So I'll usually add maybe about half a teaspoon of black pepper. And then I'll add a sprinkle of sea salt, cayenne pepper, and cinnamon. And I'll usually have some nut milk already prepared or purchased. And so I'll add coconut milk or something unsweetened, non-dairy. And then I'll add stevia because I like for it to have a bit of a sweetness. And so when the water's boiled, I'll just add that to the blender. I would probably add about 2 cups of hot water. And you know, blending it, I mean, you could do it on the stove, but it'll take a little bit longer, and blending it just makes it a little frothy. And so that's my favorite hot drink.
That sounds amazing. What do you do for fun?
Lots of things. I would say I dance. I mean, I dance to Caribbean music. So Caribbean music gets your hips in motion. And, it's when I'm dancing to that music, I'm also a facilitator. So I'm also a teacher and I became a teacher just to give me an excuse to dance to that music more often. But, it's very soulful. So it just, you know, we talked about self-love earlier. It just brings out my, my love for myself and life.
I love it. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I'm going to say that we can learn. We can learn to become entrepreneurs.
Dr. Rhea, you are full of wisdom. I could sit here with you all day.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure connecting with you in this way.
How can people find out more about what you are up to? And I feel like this is going to be a long list because you are changing the world through so many different vantage points right now.
Thank you. So I would say Living Rhea, Living, LIVING, Rhea, my name, RHEA.com, is sort of, you know, is the meeting place of all of my initiatives and as well as my coaching and my thoughts and insights. So LivingRhea.com will take you then to, you know, from Living Rhea, you can get to Camp Reset. You can get to Global Smoothie Day. You can get to the Changemaker Formula, which is one of my, you know, sort of very inclusive self-care initiatives. And obviously my new company, Bowhead Health, we haven't launched yet, but if you want to follow along there, you can also check us out there.
You are just such a gem. I was going to say, I can't wait to get together with you, but I feel like with this list of things you're involved in, I'm just like, it's going to be a while before we have the chance to sit down again. So thank you for taking the time to share with all of us. It has honestly been a really awesome conversation with so many incredible nuggets of wisdom.
Thank you so much. I'm grateful to be able to share and to, like I said, connect with you in this way. I'm very fond of you.
Well, thank you. You're so sweet and have an amazing day.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.